welcome to Everyone Has a Story. I am your host, Nate Wade, bringing you some awesome stories from average, ordinary, everyday people just like yourself. This week, we have Nate Miskin on the show. Just a little disclaimer, I do know Nate. I have known him for quite a long time. We went to school together in the rough part of town. Hey, it's Idaho Falls. Take that with a grain of salt because it's probably really not that tough. But, you know, anyway. So, but whatever. If you know Idaho Falls, you know what we're talking about. Anyways, a fantastic conversation, so stay tuned. Look forward to that. How's everybody's week going? Hope it's going well. Mine went well. We went from crazy busy, like working 9, 10, 12 hours a day, somewhere around there, to not working as hard. I mean, it's still busy, but we don't have to like bust our butts physically and be out there in the 100-degree heat sweating and dying every day in the middle of the farm field. So it's kind of a weird shock to the system when that kind of stuff happens. I don't know about you, but it's kind of weird when you go, and it's hard to adjust to get to the point where you don't think you have to just run. But anyway, just to let you guys know, your potatoes are starting to come out of the ground, and you will soon have wonderful, fresh Idaho potatoes delivered straight to your grocery store of choice. Heck yeah. Well, I hope everybody's doing well. Without any further ado, we're going to get into the conversation with Nate. Like I said, it's a great conversation. He's got some awesome music. You can check that out. You can find his music on Spotify and iTunes and places like that. We will leave links in the show notes for you to do that. You can also find him on Facebook and connect with him there and listen to some awesome music that he puts out on Tuesdays. So it's a good time. Nate's a good guy. So enjoy the conversation. Nate Miskin on Everyone Has a Story. I am talking to Nate or Nathan Miskin. Truth be known, I've known this individual for quite a few years. We were classmates together, and you know, as adults and things happened, we haven't kept in touch very well, but we have known of each other for quite a long time. And Nate, glad you're on the show. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. How you been?
Good. Thanks for having me. I'll let everyone know this is my first podcast, possibly my only one, depending on how it goes. So
you're going to be fine.
Life's good.
Yeah.
So
good.
Yeah.
Well, I think the first time we met had to have been first grade. Did you not have Mrs. Farrell for first grade?
I did have Mrs. Farrell.
Yes. And I recall the thing was, is that since both of our names are the same, Mrs. Farrell had us choose who wanted to be referred to as Nate and who wanted to be referred to as Nathan. And I recall I was the one that ended up getting referred to as Nate, and you were Nathan. Is that correct?
And yes. And if I remember that correctly, I'm glad you brought this up because I was like, you're part of my origin story, basically, right? If I recall correctly, I think you didn't like that at the time.
I do recall that being the case. Like, yeah, I was a little offended.
And I don't know if I fought for it or if I cared or if she just chose. I don't remember how the decision was made, but it seemed like you were like, no. But
that very well may be the case, yes.
For there ever after, you were Nate and I was Nathan, I think.
Yeah,
right?
that is really, at least through elementary school, that tended to be the case where just to differentiate, because I'm fairly certain we had the same teacher for quite a few of those years in elementary school. I could be wrong. At least two or three teachers were the same.
Yeah, I couldn't remember. I didn't remember that it was Mrs. Farrow. It could have been any of the other ones.
So yeah.
Seems like we were together a couple times.
And of course, I think we were the only two Nathans in our grade in elementary school. It was a little less popular back in our day than it is now. It seems like Nathan's a little bit more popular than it used to be.
But. Well, and everyone's Nate now.
Like, yeah, right?
Nathan seemed to be acceptable for a while, but then there's the rapper Nate Dogg kind of ruined it for everyone. And then everyone's like, hey, Nate Dogg, Nate Dogg. And I'm like, all right.
Right.
which is fine, but it's kind of funny that even my wife called me Nathan for the first few years of our marriage, and then nobody says Nathan anymore. It's always Nate.
Yeah, you know, and you don't even have to tell them. It's just one of those names, right?
Right.
It's just everybody's Nate, you know? You don't tell them your nickname. It's like, oh, hey, Nate, what's going on? Yeah, all those nicknames they give you, Nate Dog and Natey, and I don't know how many versions of that. Nate the Gnat, Nate the Great, whatever. You know, you hear them all.
Yeah. But, so I'm sorry if I stole your name, but I tell that story.
Do you? Do you really?
Sometimes, yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, so. No, there was no thievery involved in that. That's just the way it goes. So tell me a little bit about your childhood. I can't remember. I know you had a few siblings. How big was your family?
Yeah, so we were kind of a mixed lot. So mm-hmm. my parents divorced when I was 5. So were you
Yes, I do remember you having a different name. Yes, uh-huh. That's right.
That's right. And Mrs. Farrell found me in the hall, and she's like, I thought you weren't coming back because I didn't see your name on the roll. So between first grade and second grade, I was officially adopted by my stepdad.
Oh,
so
gotcha. Okay,
I used to be Nathan Holbrook, and now I'm Nathan Miskin since second grade.
Holbrook. So. Oh, wow. And okay, so then how many how many siblings did you have?
So there
full
were
full siblings.
Yeah, so there were four of us with my mm-hmm. mom's first marriage, full siblings, and okay. then my mom and stepdad had three more together, and so seven of us lived together in the house at any one time. Now my stepdad had five of his own that lived with their mother. So
altogether, I can't even count how many that is.
So that's 12 altogether.
Wow. Okay.
And it was a little bit strange because the step siblings were quite a bit older because my stepdad was 20 years older than my mom.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So my oldest stepbrother was just 3 years younger than my mom. So they were kind of, most of them were out of the house, actually. A couple of them still lived with their,
My
stepdad's first wife.
So did you keep in touch with your biological dad much, or how'd that happen?
Yeah, he was around. So we lived in Boise for a while. So I born in Pocatello, lived in Boise for a while after that. And then when they split, my mom came to Idaho Falls, and he kind of tried to follow, but he had a job in Boise, and it was kind of messy as divorces can get. Mm-hmm. I don't actually know because I was 5, right?
Yeah, right.
Details come out later and stuff, and I don't know everything that went on there. But he did eventually move to Idaho Falls, and there were periods of time when he was around and when he wasn't. And it just depended on a lot of things, I guess.
I totally understand that. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but my mom and dad were divorced when I was like a year old. And so it was just my mom and I my entire life. And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, I never met your dad. I knew that your mom was the one, right?
Well, yeah.
A couple times.
And the thing is, I never met my dad either. My mom and dad got divorced when I was a year old. He called me once on my 5th birthday. And then I didn't hear from him again. I finally got a hold of him when I was about 23 or 24. And we talked for about an hour on the phone. That was it. That's the whole interaction I ever had with my dad.
Well, are you one of those that have like unknown siblings out there? Did you ever find like other half siblings?
Well, this is your story.
We're both named Nate. We'll just do this together.
Okay, that sounds fair. No, I found out my dad ended up passing away in 2007. And because of that, I was able to actually get in touch with my family. And on my mom's side, she has a brother or two brothers and a sister. And out of all those siblings, she only had three nieces and nephews. So I thought I come from this fairly small family. But then when I got in touch with my dad's side, I didn't realize my family is freaking huge. I have probably 20 some odd cousins on that side of the family. I thought they were all from Montana or somewhere like that. Come to find out, a lot of them were in Idaho. In fact, I'm related distantly to a bunch of people here in Idaho Falls that I didn't even know I was. Wendy Atwood, I don't know if you remember her, but she has a cousin that I'm distantly related to, her, one of her cousins. I was like, it's strange because it opens up this whole new world. But anyways, I found out. Yeah.
Did you ever unknowingly date one of your cousins?
That's no, thank God. Thing. No, well, yeah. Thing is, I didn't date much at all. And I said, that was probably a good thing. But no, yeah. I found
you
out
know
I,
why.
That's right.
Sorry. All right. Go ahead.
No, I found out I had a half brother who is 10 years older than I am. And he lives in Missoula. He's a tattoo artist and graphic artist. He's very successful at what he does. And he got all of the artistic talent, which I recall you having a decent amount of artistic talent, if I do recall that. Me, I'm lucky if I could draw a stick figure that actually looks halfway decent.
You have the podcasting talent, right?
Well, I guess that's yeah. Well, sure. I guess that's true. I remember actually you did this thing where you created, you were creating football stickers. Do you remember those? I don't know what they were made out of, like glue or something. I don't remember,
but that sounds like me. Like I collected football cards. I loved
yes, you
football.
Did. Yeah, I remember that.
I had stickers and books of stickers. Yeah. I don't really remember.
Well, you made me,
that, but I believe
it. Minnesota Vikings sticker. If
awesome.
You recall. yes, you did.
Sweet.
And then, we played football all the time. Like every recess we were out there playing football.
Yeah.
And you were almost always the quarterback, I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the middle of the winter when the snow was frozen ice solid.
Oh, yeah. And like on the concrete sometimes anyway.
Yeah,
like we
that's
tried
true.
To go way back in the grass so we could play tackle, but sometimes the teachers would have us on the concrete.
They just wouldn't let us. No. But that was fun. That was fun. So tell me just a little bit then about growing up. I mean, like I said, we were fairly, I guess I could say we were fairly close in elementary school. I mean, there was probably, it feels like there's maybe 10 of us that kind of really played together quite a bit. I could probably reel off some names. We even played knothole baseball together. I think we were on the same team.
Were you on I was on the Yankees.
Yes, that was the one. Yeah, it was you, me, Wade Lauder, Luke Johnson, Jonathan Haroldson, Wendell Smith, I think was on there.
Yeah.
All
and
those
did,
guys.
Did you go clear up to Green Hats? You played on that's more Little League or 12-year-old
I,
or whatever. But.
I played on the Red Hats, but yes.
Oh, yeah. Red Hats.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Right. Norwest Financial is our sponsors there. No, the Green Hats were our arch enemies, if I recall.
Oh,
it's either
okay.
Them or the Blue Hats. I can't remember. One of those two teams are really good, and we were always second. We always placed second underneath whoever that was.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the light blue hats had a pitcher that was a girl. She was left-handed, and nobody could hit the ball off her. She's 12 years old. Just like, really, really good baseball player.
Well, that's right. You ended up being on the majors for the most part, I recall, because they had the majors and the minors. Wasn't that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was on the minors for most of it. And then finally when they moved me up to the majors because I ended up becoming a halfway decent pitcher – I was too old and I couldn't play anymore.
Oh, sad.
So I thought about playing Babe Ruth. And then as I got older, I stopped. I didn't want to play any sports because frankly, I didn't want to associate with the kids who normally played sports because I wasn't a big fan. I had a terrible junior high and high school experience.
Well,
looking back, I realized the only person I hurt was myself. But anyway.
Well, that's interesting because I do remember we played football all the time.
We did.
And so you must have – and you played – we played baseball, so you must have loved sports. You
I did,
liked the Vikings.
Yeah.
You, and then I would say we probably didn't associate as much in junior high and high school as we did elementary.
Right.
Just,
no, we didn't.
Just a natural bigger world, I guess. But.
Yeah, yeah. Did you play sports much when you got into junior high and high school?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
mostly baseball or football?
So I played baseball and football.
So,
I don't know how I could go on forever. Before talking to you, I'm like, we're either going to be boring and not talk about anything, or this could go on for 10 hours, right?
So
let's try to find a happy medium here.
We shall.
I started playing football in ninth grade. I wanted to before then, right? I'd see all the kids playing football and coming to school in their jerseys. And I think it was a combination of my parents thinking it was too dangerous and actually not having the money to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that.
And then in ninth grade, I decided to play football. And since it was through the school, it was going to be less money, right? And so I saved up and I figured I could pay for it. And that's when I started. And I don't know if you remember Jeremy Newman. Do you know who that is?
Certainly.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's my good friend. He lived like two or three houses up from me. And we got to playing football, and they told me that the spirit pack and the weight fees and all of these fees came up, and I'm like, oh crap, I can't play. It's too much. Yeah. And I don't know. I think you relate with being poor.
Oh yeah.
I don't want to say in a
derogatory way. No, we were dirt poor. It's
anyone who went to Bush Elementary and lived in those neighborhoods.
You could probably say we were fairly lower income.
Say that. And so I was like $50 short, right? And it might as well have been $1 million to me at that time. I couldn't figure out. I didn't have the money. And Jeremy comes over, and he has this bag full of spirit pack stuff, and he's pulling out the shorts and everything. And I'm feeling kind of sad, like, oh, because I can't play, and like he's showing off or whatever. And he pulls out this jersey, and on the back of it says Miskin. And his parents had bought the rest of the football feed for
really?
Him. So that was really awesome. And I played football, and I loved it all through high school. So
you played, and you were on the varsity team and all that stuff? And
yeah.
Nice.
I played a lot in ninth grade. And then as a sophomore and a junior, I didn't play very much. And then as a senior, I did play. So
okay. Well, now our senior year, did we win the state championship?
No, the Skyline won it when we were sophomores.
We were sophomores, and was when Rose was quarterbacking.
Trent Rose, right? Yeah.
And then Kershaw,
we never won it. He was our grade.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the year after we left, they won it.
That's right. And that was the last time they won it until just a few years ago when What's-His-Face finally took him back to what was his name? I can't think of his name now. He was coaching, or he was teaching and coaching when we were in high school. Berger. Berger, yeah. He was, wasn't he a math teacher or something? I can't remember.
I don't remember. I remember him coaching, but
He's been there forever.
I didn't have him as a teacher, yeah.
Yeah, so you got through high school fairly unscathed, I take it. I mean, for the most part. You sound like you probably had a little bit better high school experience than I did.
Probably. I mean, I heard you talking I listened to your podcast with Sean, and I thought that was interesting. Funder, right?
Yeah, yep.
Because it's interesting because you just don't know what people are going through, right?
Sure, absolutely. And you bet.
It sounds like you didn't have a good experience, so I don't want you to tell all your horrific experiences, right?
They were probably more horrific then than they are now. When I look back, I'm like, you know, but it's maturity.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
So when you got through high school, did you go straight on a mission or did you go to school?
I went to school for one semester and then went on a mission.
At Ricks or where?
I went to BYU.
Okay.
So
in Provo.
Provo.
Right. Because it wasn't BYU Idaho at that point in time.
Right. It was Ricks. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay. That was a pretty good guess, though. A lot of people went up to Ricks and just a few down to BYU. And where did you go? What did you do right after school? It's my nature to ask you. I know you're the host, but it's just
it's all right. Well, I did way too many things. I went to the first year of college. I went to Northwest Nazarene over there in Nampa. And then, cause I followed a girl there, which was stupid.
Did she know you were following her?
She probably had a good idea. So I left there and then I went to Montana State University for a year. And then I didn't go to school for quite a while. And then my wife and I, when I got married, we moved over to Boise and I attended Boise State for a couple of semesters, I guess. I went to four different schools, five different times, but I was on the 20-year plan and I finally got my degree when I turned 40. So
nice.
It is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But now I'm not even doing anything with my degree. It's completely like not even remotely affiliated with what I do. So
yeah, but you've proven you're extremely persistent, right? Over a long
I got tired of having the dreams.
Yeah.
I got tired of having the dreams of showing up to a class 6 months late for a test or in my underwear or whatever strange dream it was. And so I was just like, I'm going to finish this. And so $40,000 later, here I am. So anyway, so you went to a mission. Where did you go on your mission?
I ended up going to Moscow, Russia. So
okay.
Pretty great experience for me.
Did you have any background in Russian before you went?
No, but I think they tried to teach it in junior high. They had like an introduction to language Uh-huh. And they taught like a little bit of German and a little bit of French. And I think there was a tiny bit of Russian in there, but no, right. Nobody knew Russian. So,
yeah. How hard was it to learn it?
So it was pretty hard. It was something that I had to be super dedicated at. And like I had heard that it was hard. So I was like expecting it, but I'll give you a story on this. Mm-hmm. So one guy got up, one of the other missionaries got up, and he was trying to speak Russian in front of the whole group at a conference, right? And that was common. You'd get up and you'd try to talk, and he really, really struggled with it. And I was trying to talk to him and be nice and try to encourage him. I was like, yeah, this is a really hard language. You did a good job. You hang in there. You'll get it. I said words like that. Come to find out, he had been there just like a month less than I had, and he just couldn't learn it. And I felt so dumb, like I was like mocking him or something, because I didn't know him. I'd been in a different area, and so there were two or three missionaries that were there for maybe 8 months to a year that they just couldn't get the language, and so they sent them somewhere English speaking.
Really,
but for the most part. Oh, well. You know, you can talk after 8 months to a year.
So how was it? I mean, okay, so we're probably talking like 1993 time frame.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking the Soviet Union is not very far in the rearview mirror. I mean, Russia has just barely opened up to Western influences just in the past few years. What was that like being over there, really, when it was just brand new for Westerners to start to go over there?
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing to be there. I don't know if I thought so deeply about it because I was 19 years old, right? Yeah. I just like, it was a pretty interesting time because maybe if I'd have gone a year or so earlier, it would have been even, you know, even stranger or even more different. But there weren't very many foreigners at all, much less Americans. So that kind of was... it went one of two ways. Either people really wanted to talk to you or they really didn't. Right?
Yeah. Sure.
They're like, and in some ways they were really fearful of you. But well, there's also people, they're like, you know, this sucks. Bring back communism, right? Mm-hmm. Under communism, I stood in line forever to get food. But at the end of the line, there was always food. And now I stand in line forever. And sometimes there's not food at the end of the line or whatever. So it was very, very interesting. I'm sure it's changed a ton.
Sure.
But it was really good for me. And I really like just look at it with a bunch of reverence for that time of my life. I really, really loved it.
Well, and then for you to go over there as, you know, as a religious missionary, again, after years and years of, you know, atheistic rule as it was. And then that had to have been a little weird too. I mean, did you find most people fairly accepting of you guys as missionaries over there?
Well, not most people. No. Oh. I mean, most people aren't accepting of any missionaries, right?
Well, that's probably true. Yeah.
But if you broke the ice, it was an interesting topic to them is what I think you're kind of getting at, right? Because you'd have people that were like, oh yeah, I've been faithful. My grandma used to, you know, she had a hidden Bible and she'd read to us even through that time or whatever. And those were interesting conversations. But even if they held, because they're traditionally Christian as well, right? Orthodox.
Yeah, right, Christian Orthodox. Yeah.
But even if they held a belief, it didn't go much deeper than I'm a believer and I'm not a believer. And then so you really started from kind of a foundation when you started talking about things like trying to even understand what it means to believe in or think of a God, right? And what kind of characteristics. Or
so if they were open, it was maybe a little easier to...
They talked to you and they liked you because you're American. And they are like, it's very... You wouldn't normally approach anyone on the street, so that very scary to them and shocking, and they can be rude. But once they invite you over, they're like going to feed you everything they have. They want to talk to you forever, and
very warm once they get to know you.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, wow.
Okay. So 2 years, all 2 years you were there in Moscow?
Yeah, there's 6 months in a city called Voronezh, which is about overnight train right away.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So,
and then after you got done with your mission, did you come back and finish school or what happened?
Yeah. Yep. More or
down
less.
Down Provo?
Yeah. I was in Idaho Falls for a little bit, right? So I get home like maybe March, and then I didn't go back until the fall, but I went back to BYU and finished and didn't graduate till 2000. So
okay.
It was kind of took a little while, but not – I wasn't 40 like you, but
like some of us,
yeah.
close, but
not. but for a traditional 4-year experience, it took 8, you know. So
that's okay, that's fine. I mean, like I said, it's better than 20 years. So what did you graduate with?
Information systems and information systems management, and I tried to go into computer science because my roommates were computer programmers, mm-hmm. and that my one roommate was making $14 an hour. And I'm like, at the time, minimum wage was $4 an hour. And I'm I think I can learn how to do that. And so I tried to go into computer science, and there was one class that was too hard for me. And so I transferred to the business school, and then they had the information systems, back into computers a little bit, but not quite as intense as the computer science. But
yeah, I tried to get network administration, and I tried to take one of the what do they call those, MCTSs, the Microsoft certification exams, and I failed it miserably. It was one of their server exams, and so what do you call those guys? My counselor dude's like, maybe you should just go into information technologies instead. So that's what I have. I have an IT degree.
Excellent. That's so great. Yeah.
You know, but I look at potatoes all day long. I actually work for an agricultural company, and I spend half my day digging in farm fields. So, and at this point, they pay me so much money that there's just no way I could, you know, and it's fine. It pays the bills. It is what it is. So anyway, so then did you stay down there in Utah after you graduated from BYU?
Yeah. So we,
did you get married first of all, before you graduated from BYU?
Yeah. I got married in 97 and graduated in 2000.
Did you meet your wife there at BYU?
Yep. She grew up in Oregon. And we met at BYU, pretty typical story. And
at BYU, especially.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Yeah. No, that's a religious school thing right there, you know.
It is. And I remember as a freshman, I went down there and I was 18 years old, and we knew a girl who was 20. And it's like, oh man, she's so old. Like,
she's not married yet?
Yeah. And like, it's so psychological. You don't even realize it because it's just all around you. And
yeah.
And just kind of the next thing. And, you know, if it is. Part of the culture. And so, yeah, we did that.
Okay. Well, how many kids do you guys have?
So we have four kids.
Four kids. Okay.
Oldest one is 20 and the youngest one's 9. And
wow.
Just kind of spaced out that way.
And the 20-year-old is not married yet, or?
He's not. He just got back from his mission in a few months ago from Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
So
is he going to go to school?
He's doing school at Utah State. Online. Oh. So he's with us, living with us, but he's doing that online because of the COVID stuff.
Will he venture on up there to campus once he's able to, or will he continue to do it online?
My guess is he won't go till next year. Probably he'll probably do a full year.
That's fine. That's a pretty campus. Utah State's a really nice little campus.
Yeah.
Love that area.
Yeah, I've been up there a few times. Yeah.
My son's in, well, I've had my oldest son was in marching band, and then my youngest son is in marching band, and they've got they have a lot of marching band tournaments down there. It's one of the bigger ones is right there on their football field. So.
Yeah. How many kids do you have? You have a daughter too, right? Yeah.
Yep. I've got three boys and a daughter, and my oldest one just turned 22. And he's married, and I am thankfully not a grandfather yet, but I have a feeling that's going to change soon. So I'm not looking forward to that because I already feel old. So you got done with school, and you just stayed there. Did you live in Provo, or where'd you live exactly?
Yeah, we lived in Provo and Orem for a while. I actually didn't see myself staying there, but that's where I found a job. We had our first baby, like right when we graduated, the day after we graduated.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I got a job there in Orem, and then I went back and forth between Salt Lake and Provo. And I don't know if you know that area, but they're like 40 or 50 miles apart.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Yeah. I know enough about it. Yeah.
And so Lehi's
not a fun drive either.
No. Yeah. Lehi's in the middle of that. And I did have one time where we were living in Provo and I was working up kind of far into Salt Lake. And in the winter, it's like 2 hours, you know, 2 hour commute. If there's even the slightest fender bender on the freeway, which
there's always construction going on somewhere right around that area. So you bought a house in Lehi?
Yeah. Moved to Lehi in the middle. Yeah. And then since then I've mostly worked from home. So.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. And you still do that then?
Yeah, I started a new job in January and I wasn't supposed to. We were supposed to go into the office. It was kind of an in-office thing, but then, you know, plans changed. Everybody's working from home now because of coronavirus. And
do you think that when the virus is, you know, when this thing all passes, that you'll go back into the office, or do you think things will change where you'll end up just continue to work from home?
I think I'll do half and half.
Well, yeah. 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 Like my, you know, around here we're, like my business is like, if you want to come in, you can. If you don't want to, you don't have to. What I do hasn't changed. There's not a day that goes by that hasn't been like every day before it. So there has not been one hiccup in what I do. In fact, I even flew to Phoenix for business right during the worst part of the pandemic down there. That was fun. But they paid me hazard pay, so I guess that's a good thing. I think business is going to change drastically. I think even once this is over, you're going to see more people than you ever thought possible working from home, because I think businesses have been forced to figure out ways to do that. And I think in the long run, they'll probably save money if they have most of their employees working from home. Don't you think?
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Yep. Yeah, and then it forced them to think differently altogether, right? And how they can solve certain problems in a...
Right. I think there's a lot of innovation that's probably happening during this thing. So I don't know if it's all completely negative. I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of entrepreneurs come out of this, a lot of innovation. I think it's going to be maybe a good thing in some ways, but it's still obnoxious. Don't get me wrong. It's still obnoxious.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about your music. Follow you on Facebook. And I noticed, not recently, but maybe within the past year or two, you've really... started, what do you call them? Not so good Tuesdays, or what do you call it? Exactly?
Oh yeah. So Tuesdays, good, not perfect. Tuesday,
good, not perfect.
Right. Yeah. I tried to think of a longer name, but that's the longest one I could come up with. No.
Okay. So when did you pick up the guitar and start playing it?
So my dad played and I took like the beginning classes in high school. So, probably junior year. I started playing, and that kind of went on and off, just depending on time for a while. But in college, I started to play, and I was like, okay. I was kind of like the guitar guy, easy way to meet girls type of thing, right? And so,
yep, that's how I got married.
Yeah. So do you play guitar too? Or?
I do, but not that great. I can play G, C, and D, but hey, that's about as much as you need to know sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I always say about myself, I'm kind of average at everything. I'm average singer, average guitar player, average songwriter, and hopefully all of those together are slightly above average.
Enough to, there you go. There you go. Know.
Anyway, so I was playing for a girl once, and she's like, you should join a band, or you should start a band. And I took that optimistically, like, oh, she thinks I'm good, I should start a band. And I think she was telling me, stop singing to me. If you want to sing, go join a band. But so anyway, I did. So we started a band in college, and we had a band in college for a while. It was a true college band where you'd stay together for 8 or 9 months and then break up over the summer and then get a new drummer in the fall and stuff like that.
Right.
So that's kind of where I started, and then graduated and didn't have a band for a long time, had kids, and you know, I've always just kept writing and recording as much as I can. So the latest thing I've got going is I put out that song every Tuesday, and it kind of just started because everybody was doing that with COVID, right? Concerts mm-hmm. from home and whatnot. And so I'm going to try to do that for a year. We'll see. I'm on like number 19.
Okay.
18 or 19 in, and we'll see if I can do a new song.
Most of the songs you do are originals. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I'll do two originals and then a cover, basically. Okay. So every 3 weeks I'll do a cover.
Most recent one was like a Cyndi Lauper cover, I think I saw. Yeah. Was that what it was? Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Did great. And look, you said you're an average singer, but you sing pretty good. Your voice is pretty decent from what I can tell. So.
Thank you. And from what I know, you sing as well, right? You've been in choir.
I was in choir, back in high school. And
yeah.
I play on the church worship team, but now I've kind of been relegated to playing the cajon or a djembe or something like that. So I do a lot of percussion. And stuff like that. I'm trying to learn how to play the drums. I can play the guitar, but man, you start throwing in like, some of those stupid minor chords or something like that. And I just want to throw my guitar up against the wall because my fingers don't stretch that way. I hate barring chords. That is my least favorite thing to do. And it seems like half of the really cool sounding chords are barred and I hate it. Just give me I just want to play an E minor. Just give me an E minor. I'm good.
Yeah.
Give me those two strings. That's all I want to push down.
Hey, just transpose it into that key, right?
That's right. That's what capos are for, right?
Yeah.
That's what,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're our friends. Yeah.
I use it a lot.
So. Yeah. So, well, have you ever actually recorded like an album or anything? Or,
well, that's
or
a good question.
Do you have songs like on Bandcamp or anything like that?
Yeah. So, like I said, we started in college and that was 20 plus years ago. So. True. We went in to record our first album in college and I was thinking, I really didn't know anything. Right. And I am kind of, sometimes I get in the mood where I just decide, well, I'm going to do that even though I don't know anything about it. And so we started a band and I'm like, all right, let's record. We've got about an hour's worth of music. It couldn't possibly take more than 2 or 3 hours to record all this stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've ever done that, but we were there and, an hour and a half in and the guy hadn't finished like putting the microphones in the right place on the drums. And I'm like, oh man. So
what the guy that ran the studio hadn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And were you getting charged for that?
Oh, it's like first hour's free or whatever.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Anyway, eight hours later we had all the drums done and then we had more sessions and that's actually, it takes a long time. Right. So
yeah,
I just didn't know it. And so we thought we were going to go in, record this album, play for 8 months, try to sell our album or whatever. And it took, you know, a couple of sessions and this guy went out of town for a couple of months. Anyway, it took us like 6 to 8 months to actually record, which now that I know about stuff like that, that's actually not unheard of, right?
Yeah. It's fairly standard. Yeah. Maybe a little bit easier and quicker these days than it was back then when you're still using like, you know, whatever, an 8-track or 16-track,
right.
You know, analog tape deck or something to record your album with. But
Yeah, and some of it has to do with how good you are, and it was our first time in, so we weren't that good.
But, did you put down a click track and everything first, or what'd you do?
We had already had a click track on one of our guitars had one of those little 4-track recorders.
So okay,
we brought some stuff in.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, since then, I've tried to just record at home, and I've got stuff out there on like Spotify and just wherever, right? Spotify and Apple Music and whatever that you can stream. But it's it's clearly amateur. It's clearly like homemade type stuff, but it's out there. And so I'm actually in kind of trying to make a transition and go back into record pretty soon and just kind of do one song until it sounds good type of thing.
In a professional studio?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
there are probably plenty to pick from around there, I would assume.
There are, but, I've tried, so this is a good question because this is like my lifelong goal, right? I want to get everyone wants to get a recording that sounds like you want it to sound, right? It sounds a certain way in my head and I've never achieved that. So, and I've tried some recording studios and I've tried recording on my own, having other people try to mix it and, I've just come to the realization that I'm not talented at that, right? Not enough.
Okay.
So the studio that I'm trying to go into is the, as far as I'm concerned, is the best. They've worked with huge, huge names, is the best one here in Utah. So I'm actually
in Salt Lake area.
It's in Provo area.
Oh, wow. Okay. So closer to you then, huh?
Yeah. Nice. And, I'm a little bit nervous about it because I'm trying to do all the instruments and I haven't done anything like that for a long time. Mm-hmm. And when I say that I'm average at doing my instruments or playing the guitar, I'm not being modest. I'm actually right.
Average. Sure.
You know, when you meet someone who's just really professional, really good at it. And so that'll be interesting. So maybe I'll keep everybody updated, but
that'd be great.
Go in later this month for the first session and we'll see how that goes and see.
Is he reasonably priced or is it top tier recording prices?
Oh, well, it's probably not top tier, but it's expensive.
Have you been saving for this?
For me. Yeah. I'm finally old enough. It's like the guy that drives the sports car, but instead of buying a sports car, I'm going to pay for studio time. Right.
That's fine. That's perfect. That's probably what I would do too. Something around that way, you know? So, do you have like a website or anything like that?
Probably just Facebook, Nate Miskin Music.
Okay. Right on. Facebook. Do you push it any other social media, Instagram or
I have
Twitter
Instagram.
Like
you can just find me on Instagram, but it's my personal account. But I push it there.
Okay. All right. So go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't do Twitter because I got hacked once, and so I don't do it anymore.
Twitter's kind of a cesspool anyway, so that's probably fine. I mean, social media is bad in general, but Twitter, I think, is really bad.
Yeah.
I'm only on there just because of this podcast. Otherwise, I wouldn't be on at all.
Right. Yeah. But probably the easiest way for, you know, the thing I'm doing right now is that Tuesday song. And it's raw, right? I'm just like singing live into a microphone, no effects, just pretty raw.
Yeah.
But the best way I post those always to Facebook. So.
Okay. So when you're, you say you've got your songs on Spotify and iTunes and places like that. Do you get, I mean, are they, is it monetized? You get, you know, a fraction of a penny every time somebody streams your song or anything like that?
I made $16 on Spotify last year. I have
you did.
I have tens of fans. Whatever.
How many times does a song have to be streamed for you to make a penny?
That is a great question.
Oh, really? They don't tell you that kind of stuff.
It's something like 0.07 cents every time they play it or something like that, right?
Oh, wow.
So.
Yeah. I kind of figured it was dirt cheap.
I always do it by the millions, right? You think, oh, that person has like a million streams, and he probably made about $1,000 on a million streams.
Yeah.
So it's not really something that you do for money.
At this
level, right?
Well, I don't know how many artists are actually doing it at a level where they're actually making good money these days. I mean, music has always been something that I've really watched as far as you know, just the industry as a whole and what's happened. And from about the year 99 or 2000, especially when Napster entered the picture and everything started to go digital, the music industry has just been in a gigantic free fall, and they have absolutely, 20 years later, they still don't know what to do. They have not figured out their business model at all, and they have lost it. I mean, back in the 90s, it wasn't unheard of for an artist to go platinum or double platinum. And now you're lucky if they're selling 100,000 copies, let alone a half a million or a million copies of a record. It doesn't happen anymore. It's unheard of, you know? So if Beyonce or somebody like that ends up turning around and selling a million records, everybody's like, oh my God, that is incredible. But back in the day, it was like, if you're popular, you do, you know?
Right.
It was Aerosmith or somebody else. But now you've got to be in that upper echelon to even remotely think about getting that close to selling those kind of records.
Yeah. And there's only, you're exactly right. There's only a handful that are making money off their records, right?
Yeah.
They make companies it off, do, but they make it off tour. Yeah.
Exactly. Tours and merchandise and things like that. Maybe, you know, advertising deals and things that they can maybe get going. But most bands are just fighting to stay alive. Even big bands that we know about, they're just like, if we don't tour, we're done. And right now they don't know what to do because they can't tour.
Right. Because on the flip side of that, it still costs a ton of money to make a good album, right? You still have to fork that out. And if the record company's doing it, then the record company's getting all the money that's coming in, if there's any. And if the record company's not doing it, that's out of your own pocket, then But on the flip side, nowadays, you can do it, right? You can put your stuff out there.
Right.
Whereas back in the day, you couldn't. You could put your CDs in the back of a trunk and drive everywhere and try to distribute that way. But
You're absolutely right. So I mean, back in the day, the record companies and the radio stations were the gatekeepers of who was popular, and you know, like I said, and again, in the past 20 years, if you've got a garage band or something on your computer, you can record a halfway decent record and put it on the market and maybe sell 10,000 copies without having any backing from a record company. So I don't know. The music industry has just went kind of, it's crazy. It's fun to watch on the outside looking in going, what are they going to do? And what's it going to look like even in another 10 years? Is it going to exist anymore? Because I feel like even people like iTunes and places like that, where you can still buy the song, I'm not sure they're doing very well that way either, you know?
Right.
Most of it's streaming, and that's it.
They want you to stream it, yeah.
Yeah.
The companies like iTunes want you to stream it, but like the artist is like, hey, if you bought my song, you can either buy my song for 99 cents, or you can listen to it 2,780 times or whatever, right?
And so I get that $4 or whatever that I make off of that song. And it's kind of like the 50s and 60s where we're in a single business, you know? Like back in the 50s and 60s, people didn't buy records. They bought singles. They bought 45s, right?
Right.
And it's the same thing now. We don't buy records. We buy songs, if we buy them at all.
Right. And you put them in your playlist with all your other singles, like you're saying. Yeah.
It's an interesting thing.
How's that in the podcast world? Because that's got to be similar, where there is a revenue stream, but it seems pretty difficult as well, right?
It is. And wow, this is a long dive that you can go on this as well. But to get a monetized podcast, unless you're on something like Anchor, which is free, which is kind of looked down on in the podcast community, but you can get monetized. Like I've got a podcast on there separate from this one, and I've made like 61 cents. But to get advertisements on your podcast, you literally have to have like, I think they want you to have 2,000 downloads per episode in the first week of your podcast. And I don't make them kind of numbers. I'm lucky if I have 100 downloads in 1 week on each episode. I've had it up for 2 years. I've got about 13,000 downloads, which isn't bad, but I have no monetization. This is all I do. I pay to have my podcast, you know, distributed through a podcasting company, but I don't make any money. It's all going out. It's not coming in, but I think you're going to find it harder and harder to find, especially independent, podcasts, because, I think you're going to find it becoming more piecemeal. Like right now, any pod, you know, if you're distributed through an RSS feed and you're distributed through like Apple Podcasts or something like that, anybody can find your podcast. Just whatever pod chaser you use, you can listen to it. But if you look at this thing, like what's his face, Joe Rogan just signed a deal with Spotify for, I think last I heard it was like $30 million. He's going to get paid for his stupid podcast. I'm telling you, it's amazing. The dude, all he does is sit around a BS for an hour to 3 hours every day, and he makes a buttload of money. It's crazy. Yeah. But I think what you're going to find is you're going to find that start to happening all around the podcasting world, where these podcasts are going to pick like popular podcasts, and they're going to say, we'll pay you this money if you exclusively say you're going to stream through us. And so now us as listeners, the only way we're going to be able to consume podcasts is if we want to listen to Joe Rogan, we're going to have to go to Spotify. If we want to listen to, you know, the NPR podcast, we're going to have to go to Apple or, you know, whatever podcast you listen to. So we're going to have to go get all of our podcasts from different sources. And I don't think the consumers are going to like that, but I think that's the wave of the future.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad. The consumer always loses on these kinds of things.
Right. So. Even when we're talking about music, right, it's not up to the consumer to figure out how to get the artist's money. Right.
Yeah.
They want to hear a good song, or they want to listen to a good podcast, and the system that delivers to that to them needs to be better. It's not on them to
exactly
figure it out for them.
Yeah. So the Wild West of podcasts, just like the Wild West of the internet and all these other things, I think we're seeing the end of it. I think in 10 years, it's going to be a totally different playing field for everybody and everything, which is kind of sad. I think the internet's been kind of a fun ride to see how it's going to go, but yeah. I think we're going to lose it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which, anyway. So, well, I appreciate you joining me here on a podcast. It's been fun talking to you and catching up a little bit. Do you ever make it back to Idaho Falls at all?
Rarely. So rarely. My stepdad lived there for a long time, and we would come back every once in a while for that. But I really don't have immediate family there. I have an aunt there still, but we haven't really come back for a while. So.
No. Well, on one side, you're not missing much. It's still Idaho Falls. There's still nothing to do around here. But yeah, I mean, it's still a nice place.
Hey,
it's growing like a freaking weed.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it was a great place to grow up, I think. I mean, even we talk about the neighborhood we were in and like,
which was maybe one of the rougher neighborhoods in town.
It's a little bit hard to explain to people, but there's a little bit of respect for anyone that survived Bush Elementary. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when you're growing up, you don't know it. It's just what you do, right? You grow up, you wake up, you go to school, and whatever happens at school. I mean, I had a guy that today would be a bully, and they'd get parents involved, and it'd be a big deal. And the term I called him at Bush was my friend, and it's just like.
Yeah.
He tackled me and we wrestled and he did it every day. And I told him to stop and he kept doing it. And it's like, oh, that's just my friend.
You know? It was tough. I just drove past the street. I grew up on 8th Street till I was 10. I don't know if you remember 8th Street. You remember where Midget Market was?
Uh huh.
By any chance? Yeah. I was a block away from there, literally half a block away from there. And I just drove by there. My mom still lives over there in that neighborhood. I can't get her to move away because she loves her baseball. And so she wants to be there so she can go to her minor league baseball games every day. That's her social outlet. So that's what she does. So it's been tough on her this summer. But I drove past 8th Street and I look at that place and I'm like, I cannot believe this is where I grew up. I mean, this place looks like something right out of Boys in the Hood. I mean, it is just, it's so run down and terrible looking. And it's like, wow, I can't believe it. And, you know, just drugs and murders and all that stuff right in our neighborhood the whole time. It's just crazy.
Yeah. I was going to say, so my stepdad and mom split, right, when I was 23 or something.
Okay.
And so they had to get rid of the house we grew up in, and they immediately bulldozed it. They're like, the property without the house was worth more than the house or whatever, because it was a pretty good yard, but they're like, no one should live in this or whatever, and they just like
– And so that was – you lived on Blaine? Or where did you live?
I lived on Boise, which is pretty close. Yeah, you got Boise Avenue,
and that was up more on the hill, right? That's what I would call it. More up in the hill part.
The hill there, yeah,
yeah.
Okay. And there you kind of had a mix, right? One street would be old, run down, and then you'd have a couple of nice houses here and there, like the people that lived on Jefferson Street, you know, rich kids, you know, over there in the.
Jefferson Street was a rich kid.
Whatever the street was.
Right. I think Mark Langford lived on Jefferson. Actually, his house was pretty.
Oh,
nice,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, right.
Which would be,
yeah. Yeah, I spent a lot of time over at his house. He and I were kind of best friends, I guess. And yeah, I spent a lot of time over at his house. His parents were really fun. They were really nice to me. I mean, it was not a bad neighborhood. We'd go play basketball. I think I recall playing basketball with y'all. That was before they took all of the churches and combined them over at the stake center that they built when they tore down the hospital, and they still had those churches open, and we'd go play basketball after school at some of those, at least on the one on Elva. I recall doing that. I don't know if you were over there or not. I'm pretty sure you were.
I'm not sure. I know I played there, but I don't have a specific memory about it. But I know we'd try to play outside on those 8-foot hoops at Bush because they had – they had an actual court with 8-foot hoops on each side. And I've never even seen one of those before, but we go there and slam ball even up into high school and go down to Civitan Park, try to hit the ball over into the river and just like, it's pretty funny.
Did you ever play, This is a stupid question, but did you ever play butt ball? Remember butt ball?
I know the name butt ball, yeah. I think they call it wall ball now, maybe. But it
maybe. It's probably a little less rude.
Is that where, like, if you got out, you had to go stand up with a wall and everybody could throw it as hard?
Yeah, you had to run to the wall and say stop. And if somebody tagged you before you hit the wall and said stop, you got three chances. And then if they got you three, then everybody got to stand.
Everybody gets to throw the ball at you, yeah.
Throw the ball at your butt, yeah.
I know, but.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I used to play that game every recess, especially like in fifth and sixth grade. Oh, man, I was constantly playing that game.
Did you have or know Mr. Barlow?
Mm-hmm.
He's a fifth grade teacher.
Yeah,
So there was butt ball, tackle football, or a game that he played called Kill the Kid.
Yeah, I remember that. I haven't thought of that forever.
Yeah.
I remember that.
He'd line everybody. It was basically dodgeball, but you were lined up against the wall and you were shoulder to shoulder. So it was like there was no – you couldn't move until a bunch of the kids were gone, right? Then you can move side to side. And then he would be the one that would throw the ball at you. So imagine like a fifth grade teacher just throwing and you're talking old school four square balls that they don't even have anymore. They don't even let kids play with them anymore because they hit you in the head and you got automatic concussion, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
did you have him as a teacher?
Yeah.
I remember that being novel because it was the first male teacher that we had, you know, everybody else had been ladies up to that point. Do you remember? Yeah. I remember this vividly. Maybe you don't. And I'm going to say his name. I'm sure he doesn't listen. But do you remember Chucky Smith by any chance? Chuck Smith. He was kind of a troublemaker. He was a little bit rambunctious.
I know Chuck Clark. I don't remember Chuck Smith.
No, maybe it was Chuck Clark. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Chuck Clark. Yeah.
Chuck Clark. Yeah, I know Chuck Clark. Yeah.
Yeah, freckles. I think he had freckles and kind of reddish hair for the most part. Blonde, reddish hair.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure we're thinking of the same one. He was kind of a bully. He was pretty rough. Anyway, I remember he mouthed off to Mr. Barlow one day, and Mr. Barlow told him to get to the principal's office, and we were just across the hallway from the principal's office at that point in time, and he told Mr. Barlow to F off that he wasn't going to go over across the hallway, and Mr. Barlow said, "You will go," and he's like, "No." So Mr. Barlow walks up to Chuck, and he picks him up by the armpits, like puts his fingers under the armpits, and Chuck is kicking and screaming. And Mr. Barlow literally takes that guy all the way down to the principal's office and slams him down. It was like, wow, we were all standing there stunned. Do you remember that at all?
It was amazing. I don't remember that one.
Oh man. But I don't, that one was hard to forget for me, but fifth grade was an interesting year.
I was going to say, I remember in junior high, the PE coach pinning kids up against the wall.
Oh, Mr. Dally.
Mouth off to him.
Right?
Yeah.
Papa Smurf.
Yeah, you give him, see, you'd be up on the wall right now. And then,
he was small. He was strong. No, you didn't want to mess with that guy.
Yeah.
He was a very strong dude. So, school was interesting. I mean, growing up and going to Eagle Rock and then to Skyline and having to deal with all those, like I said, my first day of school, like I remember being friends with everybody in sixth grade and then seventh grade, I show up and it just felt like everybody wanted to try to be in their own clique. And now they were worried about their popularity and I felt stunned. And I don't know. I mean, looking back, I don't know how much of it was just my own selfish observation, but I didn't know what to do. So I literally for like the first 3 or 4 months of my seventh grade year, I would go sit in my homeroom classroom and wait till the bell to ring because I didn't have any friends. It was
yeah. And then you're talking to me, and we're like, oh, we were friends, right? But I don't know, right? I think everybody's just trying to survive. Yeah. Like they just don't know. And you can say that now because you're grown, right? But at the time, it's horrifying, right?
It was devastating a little bit, you know? And then, we started hanging out and we had our own little table, I think, that I used to sit with, especially a lot of the same kids that I hung out with in elementary school. But it was tough. And of course, I've always been overweight. And so that was always an issue, because kids are mean and people who are overweight is an easy target. And so, I had to put up with a lot of that, even from elementary school all the way When I got into high school, my height kind of caught up with my weight a little bit, and people didn't pick on me as much. But unfortunately, I was in my junior year of high school when I had my last fight over being overweight. And that was with a guy by the name of Brian Gibo. Do you remember him?
I know Gibo, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you fist fight him, or did you just like scream it fight?
I fist fought him, and he didn't get a chance to fist fight back.
Oh.
It was the last fight. Well, he stole my basketball. We were playing this massive game of dodgeball, and I started it like very simply because I had this stupid cheesy ball basketball. And then next thing I know, within about a month or 2 months, there's probably like 100 kids playing dodgeball in the little gym at Skyline. And they finally ended up locking the doors because they got tired of us being in there. But Brian stole my ball one day and he wouldn't give it back. And he's like, well, make me, stupid kid fight, And I folded my arms and he reached in and he grabbed my glasses and he ripped them off my face and he threw them down the hallway. This is right in the area where the gym is at. And the first thought that I had in my mind was, I'm going to die when I get home because my mother is going to see my scratched glasses. The second thought I had was, he's going to die first. So he turned around and the first thing he saw was my fist hitting him in the face. And that was the whole fight. He was down for the count. And that was it. And like 2 months later, we were friends again. So it wasn't a big deal.
Did you get in trouble at all? Or?
No, nobody saw the fight. No teacher saw
so
the fight.
Quick?
That was it.
Yeah.
That was the whole fight.
Yeah. And nobody'd say.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. This is like one of my fears about talking about people because I like sort of, right? There's maybe something weird about me where like someone's mean to me and I'm like, ah, I still like you on some level. And so when you say Brian, I'm like, I think we would have said we were friends.
Yeah.
But I also think that he could probably tease and pester someone relentlessly and think it was funny. Just because he was kind of that way. Right.
Yeah. And he did. And again, it wasn't very long after that we were friends again and it was water under the bridge. So it wasn't like a big deal. We didn't hold a grudge on each other and he would actually come over and sit at our lunch table and whatever. So it wasn't like it was something that we held a grudge. There was very few people that like I absolutely could not stand. Most of the time it was, whatever. We just kind of got along. But I was in more fights than I can count on two hands growing up. And usually it was.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Usually it's because they called me fat or something or picked on me because I was fat or whatever. So anyway. That is neither here nor there.
Well, good.
So,
I always think of it. I don't know how to say this right. So if this comes out wrong, hopefully you'll edit it or not.
Okay.
When someone picks on you, at the end of the day, you can come out and be like, "I am good. I am innocent. I did nothing wrong." Right. And I feel like, unfortunately, I've been on the other end of that where I've teased someone or said things that I shouldn't have done, right? Where I was mean.
Yeah.
And I don't get to, I have to own that, right? No one was picking on me. I just said things, whether carelessly or actually meaning them. And at the end of the day, that person who does that lives with that. And while you have to also live with, the emotions and things that went on at that time, at the end of the day, you're an innocent person, right? You're the good person. You're the person that.
Well, yes and no, I guess. I mean, I responded.
You did punch a guy in the face.
Yeah.
Right. But
right.
Who hasn't?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, if you go to Bush, you've probably been in a fight at least once, right? I mean, it's just the way it is. School, tough kids. There was either us that lived in the neighborhood or the farm kids that lived out on East River Road. We were all tough. That's the way it was. So
yeah, I punched a guy in the face once because I heard from someone else that he was being mean to a girl. So I thought the response was not to verify it, not to talk to this guy. I just went up to him at recess, said, "Hey," and punched him in the face. Like,
really?
Like, who does it? Who does that? And then we're talking kids at Bush did that. That just seemed like, I don't know. Yeah. And I think afterwards he apologized to me
Oh, really?
Because he actually was mean to that girl, and he's like, I probably deserve that. And I'm like, okay, like, but looking back on it, if I have a kid, I would not advise him to solve rumors by going up and punching someone.
And you know, it's nice to know that I have four kids, and I don't think any one of them has been in a fight ever. And that makes me happy. You know, they're good kids, and they treat each other with respect. They treat their friends with respect, and I'm glad they just either have the ability to let insults, you know, roll off their shoulders or whatnot. You know, just love your neighbor. That's all I got to say.
Let me ask you this though: how many of those fights did your mom know about? I'm totally joking.
You know, actually, she's told me in my adult years that she wished she wasn't as like strict on me not fighting when I was younger. She wishes she would have maybe told me, hey, stick up for yourself just a little bit more. And there are times even today, I don't get in fights anymore. I've been in a fight in whatever, 30 years or whatever it's been now. But I don't stick up for myself as much as I should, you know, on a lot of things, which is maybe unfortunate, you know. Wish I could stick up for myself a little bit more, but it is what it is. We live and learn, right?
Yeah. You wish in high school or junior high I'm kind of shifting here, but did you wish that you had played sports? Like,
absolutely. I look back now and I realize that with the attitude I had, and see, these are regrets that I have now. I realized that the only person that I ended up hurting was myself. I kept myself out of the enjoyment of participating in the sports because I didn't want to be around those people that played. And what a dumb attitude that was. It's pretty dumb. And I realize that now. So I wish I would have played.
It is, but it's also how high schools work sometimes, right? It's a real emotion at the time, right? It's easy to look back and say that. But I don't think you let that handicap you all the way, because you did participate in high school. Tell me all the things you did, right? You sang in choir, you were involved, people liked you, the ones that weren't picking on you apparently. Yeah. But I think most people would be like, oh, Nate Edwards, what a cool guy, right? Like,
yes. And honestly, that's been the surprise since I've gotten out of high school, is I guess this sounds weird, but how many people actually knew who I was? Right. And I guess for the most part did have a positive attitude of me or thought of me when I was there. That's been surprising. But yeah, I was in choir. I did debate, which ended up actually going into speech more than debate. And I was pretty good at it. I went to a couple of state tournaments with it. Those are the two biggest things I got into, you know, in high school. I was heavily involved in my church youth group, and I think that took up most of my time. I was a leader in that and participated in that quite heavily. But I didn't completely zone out, but
right.
Yeah, I guess part of it was because I didn't feel like the jocks were doing debate or choir. I guess there were some, but not a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm glad Mr. Newton was one of the coolest people I've ever met in my life. He was a great guy. So I'm glad I was able to take choir from him. So
yeah, and I didn't know him very well, but I know who he is. But
yeah. Well, yeah, and both him and his son has passed away since then. I don't know if you knew that or not, but
yeah, I heard a while back about Aaron, because he played football, so I knew him from football.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of sad, but. Anyway, let's not leave on a negative note.
I know.
So I need you to keep us up to date when you go into this recording studio. I'd love to hear the end results. Tell me, you know, let us know if you're going to put something out for purchase, when that will be. Because we don't want to just hear the song. We want to support you and purchase that kind of stuff. So, and we'll make sure we leave some links in the show notes. So whether it be your... Do you have an actual like Facebook page set up, or just your personal page?
Okay. No, I have one.
Sweet. Okay. So we'll put that in the show notes. And you said you have Instagram as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. We'll put that in the show notes so people can get a hold of you and listen to your music. You guys, you need to listen to his music. It's really good. It's a nice break on Tuesdays when he puts it out to just kind of sit back and he does a great job. It's really good. If you like coffeehouse music or something like that, it's perfect. I love listening to your stuff, and I hope you continue to pursue it.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. So happy to be on with you and talk with you. I feel like we could talk more. It's always fun to catch up. So reach out whenever.
Okay. Sounds great. Thanks, Nate. Truly appreciate it. Or thanks. Nathan, what should I call you these days?
Yeah, who knows? Whatever.
All right, Nate. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Nate Miskin on Everyone Has a Story. Thanks so much, Nate, for calling into the dungeon and spending just a little bit of time with us here on Everyone Has a Story. You know, as we kind of joked about, these conversations could go on forever. We don't see each other a lot, but it seems like when we do, we can sit there and chat and chat and chat. Nate is a great guy. In fact, we texted each other back and forth for about an hour after we got off of the podcast and just reminisced about some good times back in elementary school and high school and times like that. So, again, Nate, thank you so much for joining us here in the dungeon. If you want to find out a little bit more about Nate's music, and trust me, he's a little bit better than he lets on, you can find the links to his music in the show notes. You can, and also a link to his Facebook page, so you can get in touch with him there. If you want to be on Everyone Has a Story, we'd love to have you. This podcast does not exist unless we have people like you that are willing to share their story. You can find me on Twitter at KNate Radio. Find me on Facebook at Everybody's Got a Story. And you can also email me at knateradio@gmail.com. Would love to have you on the story. And we have merch. If you want a t-shirt or a coffee mug or something like that, and they're actually pretty good, we have the link to our store in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my brand new podcast, The Simpleton Review. You can find that at simpletonreview.com. Well, this is Nate Wade. I hope you have a fantastic week. I hope you're enjoying your Labor Day week. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time on Everyone Has a Story. This is Nate Wade saying everyone is unique. Everyone has a story. What's yours? Have a great week, y'all. Bye.
KNate Radio production.